Okay, it started. It's dialing. Okay, you have people in conference.
Hi, this is Senator John Bozeman. I'm one of your U.S. Senators. This is a live call, and by pressing zero, you will have an opportunity to talk live and ask me anything you might be interested in. This is also a time for me to listen to your concerns. So let me know, again, you know, what the issues are in your mind. The calls aren't screened. We're just going to have a good visit, and I regularly host telephone town halls. I think it's an excellent vehicle to talk to people, not just in a community, but reach thousands of people that live all over the state. So if you would like to ask a question and get in line, press zero. We're going to do this for about an hour, and we'll just talk to people as they come up. So let's get started. Are you there? Yeah,
hello?
Are you there? Yes, are you there?
Yes. Hey,
go ahead.
I was curious about your, you're on the Environment Committee, correct, in the Senate?
Yes, sir.
So I was curious about President Trump's nomination for the EPA director. What was your stance on him?
I voted for him. I think he's going to do a good job.
And why do you believe he's going to do a good job?
Because he's made it very clear, and I sat through 9 hours of his testimony being on the committee. He received more questions than any candidate ever in the history of confirming the EPA administrator. His whole premise is that he's going to enforce the law. And what we want to do is have a situation where we have an administrator who doesn't create situations where he goes beyond the scope of the authority of the agency, but really enforces the law. He feels very strongly that we need a clean environment. I feel very strongly that we need a clean environment. But you can't have situations where, like with Waters of the U.S. and things like that, that the EPA came out with that are blatantly unconstitutional. That's why you have the court system have it on hold right now. Again, we need an administrator that will enforce the law.
Thank you, Senator.
Yes, sir. Okay, let's go to our next.
Hello?
Are you there? Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Hi.
How are you, sir?
I'm well, sir. Thank you. I was curious. I hadn't heard anything lately on this. The proposed transmission line from Clean Line Energy that was supposed to run from west to east through Arkansas. I'm very much against it, and I just wanted to know if you knew of any updates on that matter.
No, sir. As you know, though, I'm very much against it also, and myself and the rest of the delegation introduced legislation, you know, to try and prevent that. So we're working hard, you know, to try and get that enacted into law. We met with Secretary Moniz when he was the head of the Energy Department, voiced our concerns. The problem I've got with it is, and certainly we need lines, but this is the first time that this law has ever been used. It was put into effect in 2005, and it doesn't allow any input from the state. So normally the governor, the utility commission, things like that play a major role. We've heard a lot about the Keystone Pipeline, and that was a controversial thing, and yet all of that was done by the cooperation of the states and the counties, where it actually ran through the landowners. But in this case, you have the ability to use eminent domain coming out of the Department of Energy in Washington, and that's not a good situation. We need to have local input. We need to have the state involved, and you know, we've been successful in doing that for ever since we've had a country. This is the first time they've had to use this law, and as a result, like I say, I'm very much opposed and working hard to do it. I don't have an update as far as, you know, what's happened in the last few weeks, but the bill has been reintroduced, and we are in the process of reintroducing. I'm sorry, let me correct myself. Working with the rest of the delegation, and hope to get it passed so that we can stop, put a halt to it. This thing is really controversial in the sense that my understanding is they don't even have a market for the energy. It's really not going to do anything for our state except, you know, just go through it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Senator. I agree. I just don't think it's going to benefit Arkansas at all. There may be some part-time, you know, some short-term jobs created, but after that,
sure,
all it's going to do is create a long scar across the natural state, and I don't think anybody would really want to see those large transmission lines when they drive from Fort Smith to Memphis.
No, I don't disagree at all. And one of the things that really irked me was that looking at the route, you know, I asked him, you know, was there any ability to go through if it was a better route, you know, if it was more convenient, could we go through national forest, you know, things like that. And they ruled that out just automatically. So it's all about, you know, let's go through, you know, private property, let's do that. We're not going to do anything to, you know, to scar the national forest, even if it were in a remote region where it wouldn't make any difference. So the whole thing is because of that and so many other things. Again, I'm like you, I'm very much against. I don't think it would do anything for our state. In fact, right now, because of the fact that they don't have a market, I don't think it would do anything for our country, period.
Right. And I appreciate you answering the question, Senator. And before I go, I just wanted to publicly thank two individuals who live in the Dover area. I don't know them personally, but I know they've done a lot of work against this proposal, Allison Millsaps and Dave Ullery. Thank you, Senator.
Yes. No, thank you. And thank you for pointing out their hard work. Appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Let's go to our next caller. And again, if you'd like to ask a question, punch zero. We don't screen our calls. It's just whoever pops up. And as you can see, you know, this is really a good discussion in the sense that we get all kinds of things that are going on in Arkansas. Are you there? Yes, go ahead.
Yes, Senator Bozeman, I just wonder what your thoughts are on any changes in the Affordable Care Act.
Well, I think we need major changes in the Affordable Care Act because we're in a situation right now where it's not working. The thing that, and again, I'm an optometrist and eye doctor, was part of the, you know, a big clinic, and I really do understand these things. The thing that was wrong with health insurance to begin was it wasn't affordable. And there's nothing in the Affordable Care Act to hold down cost, and that's why we're in a situation now where we have premiums that are skyrocketing, and $5,000-$10,000 deductibles for the average Arkansan. You know, that's simply not sustainable. The other problem is that in order to pay for the Affordable Care Act, about $700-$800 billion was taken out of Medicare. A lot of that will come out over the next 10 years, and it's going to do a couple different things. Right now, it's difficult to find if you're going on to Medicare. Now, it's difficult to even find a Medicare practitioner that will take you because the cost already that they pay physicians are so low that they're not seeing patients anymore. They're not seeing new patients. The other problem is it's estimated that if they go forward with the cuts that they're talking about to Medicare to help pay for this thing, then you're talking about losing about 50% of the community hospitals in America. They cut hospitals also. So lots of problems. There are several things, though, that I think are really important that are in the Affordable Care Act now that I think we have to work really hard to maintain. And that's pre-existing conditions. It shouldn't be that you lose your insurance. I'm sorry, you lose your job and you lose your insurance. Portability. I had a pretty significant health incident about 3 years ago. Right now, if I was in a situation where I had to get new insurance, if I quit my job and then went to another job, I would be uninsurable. That's not right under the old system. So, again, those are things that are important. Also, the thing of staying on the parents' insurance till you're 26, I think that's very, very important. And then the other one is the ban on lifetime caps so that, you are on insurance your entire life, you work hard, and then you really get sick and you hit some cap and all of a sudden you're out of luck and you have to start paying for it, which, simply, it doesn't matter who you are, how wealthy, there are situations that would break anybody, and that's simply not right. So there's lots of problems with it. It has to be fixed. The major insurance companies now are starting to pull out of it. About 30% of counties in America only have one insurer left. And then right now it looks like there'll be many counties in America where you're eligible for this voucher under the Affordable Care Act, but simply there's no provider there that will actually take it. So these are things that, they've got to be identified and they've got to be fixed. And so that's why I'm working hard to get rid of it and get us in a better situation.
Well, I think the element of the lifetime limit is something that's really crucial. My husband, before he passed away, was in hospital for 8 weeks. He had leukemia, and he had all kinds of chemotherapy and just a whole lot of things. And we were just utterly in shock when we found out what the cost of that was.
Sure.
And so, like you say, it can really bankroll even the most wealthy. So
yes, ma'am. No, I agree. I agree with you totally. That's something that, it's just simply not fair. And especially, it's not fair to anybody, but a person, like yourself that had insurance, did what you were supposed to do through the years, and then you have a loved one or yourself that gets in a situation where, they need the help. I agree with you that the caps are very, very important.
Yes. All right. Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for calling. Good questions. Okay, let's go to our next caller. And are you there?
Yes, sir. Mr. Bozeman.
Yes, sir.
Bill Rhodes. This is Bill,
hey, Bill.
Or William Rhodes. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
I appreciate what you're doing, especially Veterans Affairs type things. I don't know whether you recognize my name or not, but I would like an update on the status of the request for legislation to correct errors in the veterans law.
Well, we're working very, very hard to make sure that we're able to keep the promises that we made to veterans. My dad was retired after 20 some odd years. He was in the Air Force. And I understand that these aren't gifts. These are things that were promised. It was part of the deal. And so we have a new secretary now, a guy named Shulkin, who was was part of the VA system under the old secretary's head of VA Health. He's going to be the number one guy. He comes from the outside. a private sector guy and has lots of good ideas. I met with him. I've met with him a couple times since the first of the year talking about these things. And so we really are trying to make sure that we've got an efficient system that is going to take care of veterans and health care. And then also for those that have filed claims that they simply can't get an answer. We're working hard to, to speed up that process.
Yes, sir. But in particular, I identified about three major errors in veterans law that affect the veterans who served in Thailand. There's probably several thousand of us that these errors in the law have, denied them the benefits from the VA.
Uh-huh.
And, I don't know.
So tell me, refresh my mind real quick about what the deal was with the serving in Thailand.
Okay. herbicides, herbicides contaminated with dioxin were used at all of the installations over there.
Okay.
And the VA currently says that only certain bases that herbicides were used.
Right.
And it's Agent Orange, but
yes, sir.
But anyway, I have furnished you with the documentation
yes,
to prove
no, for
that
sure.
the herbicides were used at all the bases, were authorized to be used and were used. And, I understand you've looked at this and I was told by some of your staff that you had seen this and had presented it
right.
to your Veterans Committee.
Yes, no, for
and
sure.
And, of course, there was questions, about the cost of it, and I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But do you have any idea when we might hear something on that?
No, what we're doing now, and it was Bill, is that right?
Yes.
Yes. Bill, what we're trying to do now, in fact, we have a VA committee hearing tomorrow, is we've been in the process of really assigning committee assignments, things like that. So we're really just now firing up. What was your last name again?
It's Rhodes, R-H-O-D-E-S.
Yeah. Let me do this. Mm-hmm. We've got a committee hearing tomorrow. Let me have somebody get back to you, and I'll give you an update exactly where we're at. We've got this problem in Thailand. We've got it in some other areas. We've also got it amongst some of the people that served on board ship that were, patrolling and contaminated. So there's lots of these areas with Agent Orange, which is such a, did such horrific things to people that were exposed to it that we're trying to clean up. We were able to get, a bunch of people covered, but there's certainly a lot of people out there that are in your situation. So, but I'll be glad to check
let me offer a little help here.
Yes, sir.
Your staffer by the name of Heba.
Yes.
Is a person that's been working on this, and she pretty well keeps me up to date.
Oh, good.
And,
I'll be checking in. Well, good. And we'll get the latest tomorrow because, like I say, I'll be spending a lot of time with the staff tomorrow at this hearing, the VA staff, and then we'll go from there.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah,
appreciate you.
You bet.
Appreciate your service very, very much. What branch were you in?
I was in the Marine Corps.
Oh, very good. Once a Marine, always a Marine.
Right.
Right. Well, thank you, sir.
All
appreciate
right.
you.
Well, thank you.
Yes, sir. Okay, let's go to our next caller. And, again, if you'd like to ask a question, punch 0, and we'll go from there. Are you there?
Hello. Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I was curious as to what your opinion is on the southern border and what procedures should the Hispanic people have taken when they first came to our country to make themselves legal?
Well, I think that we need to secure the border, and we need to do that for several different reasons. First of all, to control illegal immigration. That would be one thing. Secondly, there's a drug war that's raging in Mexico that's spilling across the border. We need to control that. And then lastly, we're a nation at war. So we need to be able to know who's coming in and out. But the other thing is, no matter what we do, whatever we decide is the best way to handle our immigration problem, if you don't secure the border, if you don't limit the flow of people coming into our country, because we are a great country and everybody wants to come, and these are hardworking folks that just want to take care of their families, but there is a limit to how many we can do. We are blessed. We naturalize almost 1 million people a year, almost as much as the rest of the world put together. There's 5 million people in line that will wait up to 10 years, doing the right thing, standing in line, waiting. So it's not fair, for people just to jump to the front. The other thing is you have to protect the American worker. And when I was growing up, and certainly to be a butcher or a carpenter are very honorable professions, but when I was growing up and until not too long ago, those were equivalent in pay to probably a teacher's salary in that regard. Now we're in a situation where those are minimum wage jobs because of all the cheap labor. So there is a limit. We do need to secure the border. And then once you do that, then you sort these things out with a visa program. You decide, who we need in the numbers and things. You provide visas. And you hold employers accountable, that simply hire people that they shouldn't hire. So that's pretty much how I would do it.
Well, I agree in securing the border, but, without the migrant workers and the farm laborers, we probably would end up with a shortage of food.
No, I agree totally. And that's what I say. That's why you need the visa program, to allow, people that to come and work. And, most of these people don't want to come over here and stay. They want to come over, and like they used to in the old days. They'd come over, they'd work hard, they'd make some dollars, they'd go back to their place where the cost of living was much, much less and take care of their family. Now the border is secure to the point where it's much, much secure than it used to be. So they come over, and then they can't go back because they can't get back. And so I don't disagree with you all. I mean, we certainly need, hardworking folks to do these jobs, and they're very willing to do them, and they do them, in a great manner. But right. But I do think you do it, you do it in a lawful way. You get a visa program, you get all that worked out where they're coming, and then, like I say, then they don't have to worry about, being in the situation of being caught and then banned and all of those kind of things.
Because in my part of the state, we have a lot of Hispanic workers in the
yes, ma'am.
Chicken processing and those kind of
places. Where are you at?
Holiday Island.
Okay, yes, ma'am.
North
of
Eureka
sure.
Springs. Mm-hmm.
No, I know Holiday Island well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful part of the country.
Yes, it is. Nice place
so
to
retire. Yes, ma'am. So I don't disagree, but I do think it needs to be done in an orderly way, and then that way it's fair, and you get the people that we need as a country. So
mm-hmm.
Appreciate you calling.
Thank you. Thank
yes,
you.
Ma'am. Thank you so much. Let's go to our next caller. If you'd like to get in line to ask a question, punch 0. And again, like I say, we don't screen calls. It's literally who pops up. So are you there? Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yes. So I'm a young Arkansan. I currently attend University of Memphis, so just across the river there.
No, for sure.
And the ACA is on my mind.
Yes.
So I benefited a lot from some of the provisions that you mentioned earlier, including the extension to 26 years old.
Right.
I was just wondering if you would comment a little bit about some of the options that have been recently leaked regarding a potential replacement, and if you could commit to supporting a replacement that would keep those things that you mentioned earlier intact, so that students like myself that are living below the poverty line on graduate students' wages can continue
sure.
to remain insured moving forward.
No, No, I will for sure, and we're working hard to do that. Right now there's lots of negotiations going on, and that's a good thing. This is 18% of the economy, and it has to be done right. But I think one thing that I hope we would agree on is that what we've got now is not working. So many Arkansans are in a situation now where their premiums literally have doubled, and in order to hold down the premium to doubling, in many cases, they have $5,000-$10,000 deductibles. That's not insurance. That's catastrophic insurance.
So if I can respond really quick.
Yes.
I know that some of the things that have been proposed have included leaving some of these conditions on plans that we require they maintain a certain level of effectiveness as insurance. I know that would greatly reduce the cost and potentially increase the number of people that were insured, but like you've mentioned, those wouldn't protect against any reasonable negative like health outcome. I'd also say that as somebody that lives below the poverty line on a graduate student's salary, and I only get it two semesters a year, I've greatly benefited from the ACA, and the only reason that I can maintain my insurance, which is actually fairly reasonable with a very low deductible, it's about $100. I even have dental. I pay $75 a month for my two plans. And so the ACA has definitely worked for me, and I would hope that moving forward, we could consider people that are in my position, not necessarily as grad students, but people that are having difficulty making ends meet.
Sure.
We need insurance as well, and if the cheapest plan on the market isn't really an insurance plan, I don't know that it's very healthy for us as American citizens in general to allow such a plan to exist, and I would support not repealing those particular things in order just to get more people on the rolls as being insured.
Sure. Now, again, I think if you make it somewhat like your car insurance, in the sense that you have some ability to dictate all the bells and whistles that you want on your car insurance, you can opt for everything, or you can opt for basically hardly anything. And there does need to be a minimum with health insurance, but I do think that having the ability to negotiate a plan, where you've got some say in that, would greatly help the cost, which somebody has to pay for, and then it also would greatly help affordability, of plans. The idea of keeping people on until they're 26 and things, I very much support. That's worked really well. And, again, we need to stay with that. We mentioned, don't know if you were on earlier, but we talked about, the lifetime coverage caps and things like that.
Yeah.
I
think that those are common sense.
Portability, that is so important. I'll tell you, to be honest, one of the problems that we have is even getting people like yourself, and I'm so pleased that you're on a plan, because many of your buddies, simply even paying a very reduced amount of money, simply don't do it. And that's one of the things, that's made it such that is causing real problems. So that's a little bit of a problem.
So I know that earlier in the year, and this was reversed, thankfully, so some of the things that help people like me engage is the healthcare.gov and the outreach that the government has done to make sure that it's an easy process, that there's lots of people to talk to, either on the phone or online. I know that the Republican administration was silently stopping the running of ads up to the end of the enrollment period, starving out some marketplaces. I also think it's very predatory to use the 30% of counties line that only have a single plan. I've heard that line a lot, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that. Are these highly populated counties and dense areas, or are these low populated areas or counties that don't contain a lot of people, like say in Alaska?
No.
You've got, one person per 100 miles.
No, there's about 30% of the counties. I'm almost sure that there's some states that only have one carrier of the entire state. So the problem is that, the carriers are bailing out. You know, most of the exchanges, a good portion of them have gone bankrupt. I mean, they just aren't working. And so when you're losing, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, we're just seeing more and more of them pull out all the time. There will be counties next year, and this is not an exaggeration at all, but there'll be counties in the country unless something drastic, you know, isn't changed, where you'll have people that are eligible, you know, for the benefit, but there simply won't be anybody in the county that will, you know, that's part of the program. So Aetna,
replacements that are currently being talked about in the Senate or the House that I could read up on, where issues like that are directly addressed with real policy.
Well, that's exactly what's getting hashed out now, is how do you do this? You know, we spend $1 trillion, you know, we'll spend almost a couple $1 trillion over the next 10 years. And, you know, we have helped some millions of people, but really just a few million. But we can do that without screwing up everybody else's health insurance. And that's really what the situation we're in. And the reason that we are is because what they did was they took a failed system that we had and basically just added a whole bunch of more people to that system. And you know, everybody else that had insurance is paying for it. I mean, it just simply doesn't work. So you have to do some things to make it such where you've got more competition in the system. You need to be able to shop across state lines. I've had the same car insurance, I think, since I was 16, but, you know, it comes from out of state. You know, I can do that. I can get the best deal on it. I can get the best deal on any kind of insurance. You've got to make it such where you allow small businesses, my barber, to team with maybe 1,000 other little barber shops and get, you know, the best deal they can in the marketplace. Really encourage that. Health savings accounts. There are nuisance lawsuits. There's lots of counties in Arkansas where they don't deliver babies because of the cost of malpractice. So, you know, those are real problems that we've got right now. And just throwing money at it isn't going to work, because literally the money's running out. Again, I don't know if you were on earlier, but I talked about the reduction in Medicare fees to providers. And so they're going to continue to get cut over the next 10 years. And as I said earlier, it's estimated the Congressional Budget Office, which is pretty conservative, you know, about these things, said that, the reverse of that, you know, they're pretty, you know, want to paint the rosiest picture that they can. And, you know, they're estimating that between 40 and 50% of our community hospitals will no longer be there. The problem there is you lose your community hospital. Those are the best jobs in town. Those are the things that you look at if you're going to, you know, settle a business there, if you're going to retire and things like that. So pretty soon you lose your community. But if you would go to our website, and then too, I would go to Lamar Alexander's website. He's head of the health committee in the Senate, and I would do some things like that, and I think you'll get a better idea of what we're trying to get done. But you know, the points that you make are good points, and they're real problems, and I appreciate you being part of the system. And so,
yeah, absolutely.
You know,
as one of your constituents, I just wanted to demonstrate that there are people that have benefited from the ACA, and I definitely think that there are people that can continue to benefit from a lot of the common legislation that encompassed by the ACA, and especially those people that are tenderest or hit hardest by changes in their job. Those are the poorest of us.
Sure.
We need insurance too, because we need peace of mind, if not anything else.
No, you're exactly right. And you're a guy that, you know, you're a graduate student. What are you getting your master's in?
I'm seeking a PhD in computer science.
Oh, great. So, you know, you're in this process now, and one of these days you're going to get done with your education, and you're going to make a good living for your family and pay a lot of taxes. And, you know, that's how it's supposed to work. But, you know, there are times in our lives where we do need help, and you're a great example of that. And it'll pay off in the sense of you, you know, being a real contributor to society. So that's a good thing. Appreciate you calling.
Excellent. Thank you, Senator.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Okay, good questions. Let's go to our next caller. If you'd like to ask a question, punch zero, but are you there? Go ahead.
Hello, Senator.
Yes.
Hi. My husband and I are both 61 years old. After working 40 years, we made a decision to retire early. And, of course, we were concerned about health care because we're not eligible yet. We're not 65, not eligible yet for Medicare.
Yes, ma'am.
And the ACA played a big role in us making this decision.
Sure.
We haven't experienced a hike in premiums, and we relocated to Arkansas. We contribute to the economy here.
Uh-huh.
And so what I hear you speak, I heard you speak several times to people that have jobs that can carry their insurance with them, but our situation is completely different. I mean, if our insurance goes away, we have no insurance. So,
right.
And the thing that concerns us a lot is being put into a high-risk pool.
Uh-huh.
Because of our age, and we're going to be paying, you know, something beyond that, what we can afford now.
No, I agree totally. And the key is affordability. And, you know, things are spiraling out. So you haven't had increases in premiums?
No, we did not experience an increase in premiums. And we think it's very reasonable.
The average increase,
yeah,
you know, this past year was like 24% nationwide.
No,
so
we didn't see that. Yeah. So mm-hmm. Where does that leave us, though, with what you guys are considering currently? Where would that leave us as 61-year-olds? Are we to go back to work? Or?
No. That, as I said earlier, you know, portability, the ability to, you know, just like when you left your job, you didn't have to worry about your car insurance, you know, not being able to obtain that in an affordable way. And so that's something that's so important. And you know, you might be 41 years old and develop diabetes, and in the past, you'd be in a situation where you're uninsurable, and then you couldn't quit your job because you didn't know, you know, if you get insurance in the future. That's not fair. You know, that's not right. And you're a good example that you all are in a situation where you can retire, but you can't, you know, you have to, unless you have something like the ACA, unless you have some sort of program to carry you over that is affordable, then you simply couldn't do that. So I'm very much in favor of, you know, keeping a system that allows that type of thing to stay in place. But again, the ACA now, if you would read about what's going on, you know, with the program right now, for many people, the costs are spiraling out of control. And what kind of deductible do you have?
I have, what is it? I think it's
$1,500. Okay.
And we're okay with that.
Yeah, no, I think the average silver is like $3,000, $3,100. I'm on Obamacare also. I'm on the ACA.
You are.
You know, I worked hard to make sure that, you know, if it was good enough for the public, it was good enough for Congress. And so myself, my staff, you know, are all on the ACA. So you got a better deal than I do.
Right.
Which is good.
I carried Cobra for a little while after. I just didn't want to,
sure,
the process of moving, I didn't want to interrupt my insurance until I got,
sure,
we got settled in Arkansas. And what I was paying for Cobra, the ACA program that we went on was, is almost $600 cheaper a month.
No, that's good. That's good. And again, you know, the thing that was wrong with insurance before, you know, we started fooling with it was affordability. And so, you know, that we got to make it affordable. And then also we do have to protect people like yourself, you know, that you get yourself in a situation where you're between insurance with your employer and then not eligible for Medicare yet. You know, something happens, you become uninsurable. In the old days, that simply, you know, is not a good situation, and that's something that we need to fix and continue to guard against. So I agree with that totally. So we're glad you're in Arkansas.
Well, thank you. Happy to be here. Beautiful state. So I wanted to make you aware of that in our situation. And I don't think we're alone.
No, not at all. Sure.
You know, by leaving our well-paying jobs, we opened up two jobs for college graduates or
sure.
other people were looking for jobs, you know. And, we were only looking for what's fair, really. And like I said, it played the affordability of insurance play a large part in us deciding to go early.
Yes,
so good luck to you on working on this, and I look forward to following your votes and see how you make your way through that.
Well, I appreciate it, and thank you so much for good question, good comments. Again, this is something, you know, those kind of situations are situations that have been very helpful. But we do need to make sure that we have a situation that is affordable and is sustainable, because what you're going to get into, you know, you're going to hit Medicare age not in the near future, and then the problem is going to be, you know, finding a Medicare doctor. And if we continue the cuts to pay for the other, then, you know, it's difficult now to find a Medicare provider. It's going to get more and more difficult with, you know, as time goes by. And if you happen to be in one of our smaller communities, as I said earlier, with the cuts that are coming in the next 10 years, about half of those community hospitals are going to go away. The reason being is the only way you can control cost, we've seen this with consolidation of schools and everything else, is consolidation and rationing. And so you consolidate, you start having to travel. Like you say, well, John, that's not going to happen. The government programs that we have right now, the VA system, you know, if you're a veteran and you live a long way from the VA, you know, you travel. Indian healthcare is the same way. So it all goes together, and it's just going to take a lot of hard work, but it's something that we need to get done. So appreciate you calling very, very much.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Okay, let's go to our next caller. Good calls, lots of good information, and if you'd like to get in line to ask a question, punch 0, and here we go.
Hello?
Are you there? Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I'm here. Hi. Thank you. This is actually a very good system. I was wondering about a teletown hall. You know, there have been criticisms of the concept, but you're giving people opportunity for follow-up questions, and it's as if we're sitting there talking to you. It's very nice. Thank you.
No, thank you. And it really is a good concept in the sense that we're able to talk to lots of different people, and calls from all over the state. And again, you're a good example of this. You know, nobody screened you. You just jumped on.
That's right.
So,
yeah, pretty amazing. I have a question. My question is about what's called, the problems in Washington, D.C. I know people are real concerned about the communication not being so good. They're not being compromised on bills. I feel like we have to work together for the future of our country. And I'm sure there will be progress now that the Republicans are in the majority. But I'm wondering what you think about what has caused the block in D.C., which we see from out here, and it seems so frustrating that people can't compromise and work together like used to happen in Congress. And one reason I'm asking this question is because I understand that you vote strictly on along party lines, which means you don't reach across the aisle to compromise with folks. So I'm just wondering how you see that whole issue of compromise. And I do believe it's extremely necessary these days for peace of the country.
No, I agree with you totally. And you know, the idea that I don't reach across party lines and don't compromise and don't just vote on party lines simply is not right. And I'll give you some examples. In the last Congress, we passed a bill that was a huge rewrite of the No Child Left Behind bill. That was a bill that was passed about 15 years ago that really put a lot of controls on the schools. We came back in the last 2 years and rewrote that bill. It was the greatest give back to local authorities, the states, the local school boards and things in the last 25 years. That was done in a very, very bipartisan way. Lots of Democrats and Republicans voting for the bill. I voted for it. A lot of my Republican friends didn't vote for it. A lot of my Democrat friends voted for it, and some of them didn't. So those are good things. The other thing was we passed a big highway bill. The two people that put that together, and I was on the committee that put it together, was Barbara Boxer from California and Jim Inhofe from Oklahoma. They have absolutely nothing in common in the sense, you know, that the one's very conservative, one's very liberal. But both of them believe that the federal government needs to spend on our infrastructure. That you could argue that one of the reasons that we're the great economic powerhouse that we have is we have good infrastructure. We can move goods and services. So they came together and we were able to get that passed again in a very bipartisan way. That's why we're having a lot of road construction going on in Arkansas. You know, all of those are good things. We passed a rewrite of the big chemical bill that hadn't been done since the 1960s. Those are good things. Right now I'm working with Senator Tester from Montana about a homeless veterans bill, you know, making it such that we can, we actually got this passed last year. I'm currently working with Senator Heitkamp from North Dakota, Democrat, about trade with Cuba. You know, that would be, I think, a good thing to do. It would help Arkansas, but it also would help the Cuban people. So as far as, you know, the atmosphere that we have, not only here just reflects the rest of the country. And, you know, the country's split. There's lots of people that feel like we need to move more in a direction of a really strong, strong federal government, that, you know, things are dictated out of here, more of the Bernie Sanders idea of more of a socialist, European socialist type situation. And, you know, Bernie loves his country. Those people love their country. They feel like that's the best thing to do. But there's lots of other folks here and at home throughout the country that say, no, you know, we don't want to do that. We want to, you know, continue doing things where the states, the local government has a lot of control. And so we really are divided right now. And eventually that'll settle out. But I think that's a large part of it.
So you are positive about the future and working together across the aisles, not only for yourself, but for the whole future of the Congress?
Yeah, no, I really am optimistic, and I think that, I think President Trump is going to surprise some people in that regard. Now, he's a guy that speaks his mind, and, you know, that's a strength, and it can be a weakness. But I think we're going to get a lot of things done that are directly going to benefit the American people. But I'm always, you know, I'm on the Agriculture Committee. I'm on the Environment and Public Works Committee. Both of those are very, very nonpartisan. The Veterans Committee, you know, that's all about just, you know, there's not Democrat veterans that we need to take care of and Republican veterans. There's just veterans out there that we need to take care of. And so everybody works really hard to do that. So those are good things.
Okay, well, a good answer. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for calling. We appreciate it very much. Okay, let's go to our next caller, and we got lots of good comments and lots of good questions that are really very, very important. Are you there?
I am.
Go ahead.
This is Dorsey, and I voted for Kasich, and I have to admit I am not a fan of Trump.
Okay.
I want to know why you haven't called out Trump for his lies, why you haven't called him out when he attacks the press, because I and other people believe that this is one of the greatest threats to our democracy. And what are you going to do to investigate Trump's relationship with Russia?
Well,
and how will we know without seeing his tax returns how much money Russia controls of his?
Right. There's going to be several investigations of him regarding Russia. The intelligence committee is working on that right now. And, I've got all the confidence in the world if there's anything seriously wrong there that it will come out. And I'm committed to doing it.
Why isn't Congress doing it?
Well, Congress has only been in session for about 3 weeks. So,
right.
This has
been known for months now. And I hate to say this, but I know if Hillary were in there would be investigations already taking place. I mean, it's ridiculous to say they've only
but
been
there,
in.
Yes, ma'am. But there are investigations going on right now as we speak. I mean, this is the intelligence committees are currently doing this. So, and they're doing it with my blessing. I mean, I think that it needs to be investigated. I don't have any problems with that at all.
I haven't heard you call him out for his lies. I haven't heard you call him out for his attacks on the press. I mean, do you not think that needs to be done? I mean, John McCain's doing it.
Well,
but shouldn't more people step up to the plate?
What specifically are you concerned about? What lies are you talking
the
about?
The fact that he gets up there and lies with all the time. He attacks the press. He bans the press from White House briefings. And nobody, you guys are just sitting there with your head between your legs. If we don't do something, you know, we're going to be like Germany was. It's frightening.
The press does make mistakes, and it's
sure
okay.
The press makes mistakes.
Okay, it's okay for him to call them out.
That's not the issue. That's not the issue with the press making mistakes. Press has always made mistakes, but that doesn't mean that the White House has ever banned an organization from the a press conference.
I think they were all there today.
But why won't people speak up? Is it because you're just so afraid of Trump because he's crazy?
No, I mean, I speak up about all kinds of things. What I'm doing right now is working really hard to get health care straightened out. I'm working hard on the Homeland Security thing. I'm the chairman
Congress
of the committee that's going to have
Congress
to fund
gets,
it. So,
Congress gets their health care paid for by a government subsidy. And I looked at the
No, that's not true. I'm on the Affordable Care Act, and I worked really hard to make sure that if it was good enough for Congress, if it was good enough for the American people, it was good enough for Congress. Okay.
Well, it
so
is.
John Bozeman worked very hard to get that inserted, and that's a good thing. And so I'm on the ACA. What are you covered by?
I have private health insurance through my employer.
Yes,
okay. My premiums increased. I am fine with that. I had my husband and I, who passed away 3 months ago. We had 5 children. My last 2 were able to benefit from staying on my policy until they were 26.
And
which
I'm very
great.
Much in favor of that. And that is great.
I have lupus. I do not want, a pre-existing condition to keep me from getting insurance in the future. And
sure.
The fact of the matter is if we don't make healthy people buy health insurance, we're going to have a problem unless you guys just tax everybody like they do in other countries and just get a new tax. And quite frankly, I'm fine with helping people who can't afford stuff. I'm sure I pay more than Trump in taxes.
I don't know.
And I suspect you do. And I suspect people making $30,000 a year pay more than he does.
Right. Well,
and we should know what he pays.
You know, certainly we're working hard to try and get some tax reform done. So that we can be more competitive. Again, those are the things that we're working on, and those are things that are really important.
I don't understand,
you know,
how you say that when...
Say what?
For the last... Say that we're working on that. For the last 8 years, you were part of the people who were voting no to everything.
I think that I just outlined with the last caller that several examples of things that I was very involved with that were passed that were major pieces of legislation.
Has there been an alternative to the Affordable Care Act?
No Democrat has put one out, which
no,
I would
but,
love
no,
to
they
see.
Haven't.
Exactly.
But what I'm trying to get a point is that you and the rest of the Republican Party has complained about it, and they've had years to come up with something, and all they did was keep Obama from having all of his plan put into force, and so he had to compromise to get through what he did. I mean, I think it's great that there's a lot of people on coverage that didn't have it, and I think it's terrible that some people's premiums went up, but I think it's worse that the people who are making a killing are the insurance salesmen.
Well, again, I haven't seen a plan that has come up with President Obama. I know that we're working very, very hard to get a plan that's right. And I think that's good that we're doing that. I mean, this is 18% of the economy. It's a big deal. It's something that we do need to get right. I know that if we go down the trajectory that we're going now, and it's not just me that's saying this. If you'll look and be honest about it, the Obamacare right now, the Affordable Care Act, is getting itself in a death spiral. Young people aren't taking out because they can't afford it. And as a result, the insurance companies are pulling out. Along
well,
with
the,
that, as I
it's
mentioned
not
earlier,
that simple, as
along
you know.
With that, as I mean, I do know it's simple. That's simple. Along with that is the fact that that Medicare is in a situation where about $700-800 billion is going to come out of it over the next 10 years, and as a result, you're going to see decreased payments to hospitals, decreased payment to providers. Congressional Budget Office says that we're going to lose between 40% and 50% of our community hospitals. And the reason you do that is like they do schools and everything else. That's the only way that you can save money is through consolidation. So I don't think you and I really disagree in the sense that it has problems. It's got some good things. You mentioned the 26. You mentioned the situation that you're in now. If you'd like to retire and you're between Medicare age, you know, and you had diabetes or something, you simply couldn't do that because you would be uninsurable under the old situation. That's not right. You know,
right.
We need
and
to
that,
protect
and that's
those things.
But
we don't need. We're going to spend a couple $1 trillion counting the next 10 years. We don't need to spend all of that money and make it such where we have a plan that's not working and ruin everybody else's insurance at the same time. I mean, it's just, we can do better than that.
Well, maybe we could cut back on our military spending. And I have
a niece in
the military, and my son was in the military. But, I mean, we're throwing money out there like, you know, I think that they could make some cuts and it would be way more effective. But I do wish that you would call out President Trump, the next time he comes out with outright lies and call him out the next time he attacks the press, because that is an attack on our democracy.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for calling. We do appreciate it very, very much. Yes, ma'am. Thanks a bunch. Okay, let's go to our next caller. Again, really good calls with lots of expression of opinion. And again, I realize that there's lots of different viewpoints, and everybody loves their country and wants to do what's right. And so that's why we're having this discussion. Are you there?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Mr. Bozeman, I'm not only from your state, I'm from your hometown of Rogers. I went to school with two of your daughters.
Good.
My question today is...
I grew up in Fort Smith. I'm a Northside Grizzly.
Yes, sir. Well, I'm from Rogers originally.
No. And as you know, I was on the school board in Rogers and have three girls that graduated from there. So did you go to school with some of my girls?
Yes, sir. I went to school with the two younger ones.
Oh, good. Very good.
My question is, this legislation that they've recently come out with about trying to get the electricians and the HVAC guys to be able to practice without a license. Two things. My first one is, what is your standpoint on that? You had referred earlier to one of the other callers about the construction aspect of things and how that job had moved into a minimum wage job due to the illegals coming.
Cheap labor.
So my first
really
question
cheap
would be,
labor.
Right. My first question would be where you stand on that issue. And my second would be, how did they come about choosing just those two professions to try to push through without a license to let people practice those?
You know, to be honest, I'm really not aware of that situation. I'll be glad to take a look at it, and we'll get back to you and see what the deal is. But like I said, to be honest, I don't know.
Okay.
I know that's. I wish I could tell you more, but if you would take and email me, you can go to our website and look for that. How you get in touch with it? Will you email me?
Yes.
And in fact, do this. Call our Lowell office. Let me give you a number.
Okay.
Hold on just a second. It is 479-725-0400. So 479-725-0400. Will you call them and just tell them how we can get in contact with you, okay?
Okay.
And then we'll figure out what the deal is. And deal. Now, what was your second comment and question?
I was just curious how, I mean, if you weren't aware of the first one, the second one's kind of doesn't matter. I was just wondering how they chose only those two professions to push through.
Okay, I understand. Are you in those trades?
I'm in the electrical trade, yes, sir.
Okay, no, very good. That's excellent. And things are picking up in the in that part of the state, and that's a good thing always.
Right.
And hopefully you're staying busy. But we'll be glad to take a look at that and try and track that down for you, okay?
Okay. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay. If you want to ask a question, punch 0. And let's go to our next caller and see what's on their mind.
Okay, Senator, my name is Bob. I'm from Mountain Home, Arkansas.
Yes, sir.
And the first thing I'm going to comment on, and then I have a question, I had to chuckle when you say that you're taking insurance through the ACA. When you say that you're getting your insurance through the Affordable Care Act.
I am.
Are you?
Yes, sir, I am.
I guess you were getting insurance before.
I was. Well, let's talk about it. I'm on the Affordable Care Act now. The rest of the government, if you go down to, I used to be on the same insurance that the Social Security lady there in Mountain Home was, if there's an office, or the park ranger there, the post office people. I was on the same insurance as them. When they came out and they said, we're going to pass the ACA, then I said, and many others said, if it's good enough for the American people, it's good enough for Congress. So Congress was put on it. The executive branch, the president, they made it such that they weren't. Okay? So, yeah, I'm on the ACA, as is my staff.
Okay.
And that's the right thing to do. Like I said, that's the right thing to do.
Okay, yes, and I agree with you. It is the right thing to do. My question is on immigration reform.
Yes, sir.
You know, you talked a little bit before about the border wall, and you said that on your website that the previous administration sought to solve the issue of immigration and border security without the input of Congress. Now, Mr. Trump, President Trump, has ordered Homeland Security to hire 10,000 more border security agents and stuff like that. Did Congress give the okay to that?
What that was referring to on the website was the fact that President Obama issued an executive order that basically said, you know, that you don't enforce the current laws on the books. He went forward with the Dream Act kids and all of those kind of things, and really did a lot of things that the court said, hey, you can't do. And as a result, they actually, you know, have held it so that he couldn't go forward with it. And it's currently on hold until, you know, we get a new Supreme Court judge and it goes to the Supreme Court. So the lower court so found that it was unconstitutional. Now, the stuff that President Trump has done has basically said, we're going to enforce the law that are on the books. And that's a markedly different policy than, you know, President Obama. So that's kind of where we're at now.
Has Congress approved hiring of 10,000 more border agents?
No, but they'll have to in the sense this is what he wants to do. You know, he said he wants to do that. He has an executive order to move in that direction. But the reality is Congress will have to they'll have to appropriate the money before that can actually be done. So he'll need Congress to go along or it simply won't get done.
But
they'll have to vote. They'll have to vote and approve that. Yes, sir.
But we've got 10,000 border agents, and then you've got to provide housing to those border agents. And I guess my real concern is you're going to spend money for border security, which is basically at the end of Obama's term was negative zero, negative. There were more people leaving than coming. And then there was a news thing the other day that says we got 55,000 bridges in the United States that are unsafe. Why would we put the money into border security and not the bridges?
Well, I think you have to secure the border, you know, really for three reasons: illegal immigration, the drug epidemic that's you know coming across the border, that you
I
get
agree
south
that
of the border.
Bad,
and
the
then
bad hombres leave. I agree with that. I lived in Tucson.
You know, we're a nation
at
war, but I do think, you know, the 5,000 whatever, that's, you know, that's what he's saying. There's going to be hearings about that, and I think, you know, you spend the money and to do what it takes as far as a virtual wall, whatever we need in that regard. But it doesn't really matter. If you don't secure the border, then you really can't get immigration straightened out. And I do think you have to protect the American worker and the inflow of cheap labor. A lot of these folks right now, we're in a situation where the Obama administration, if you go down and sign up for benefits, the way that it's done, it's called self-reporting. You say, you know, it's just got a box, are you a citizen or not? Of course, everybody checks yes. But, there, you know, that stuff is not checked out. And so, as a result, you have a lot of people that are drawing benefits that they shouldn't be drawing. We have a very high safety net in this country. Somebody has to pay for that.
And I don't
most of these
agree
folks
with
are,
any of that. Is putting a wall up the answer? Putting a wall around our country is not the answer.
Well, I think
you
have to do it in the cheapest way that you can do it. So how do you protect your border? How do you defend it without either that or stationing people down there?
We've done it for 200 and some years, and I realize there's bad people coming across, but let's just deal with those bad people. Let's not deal with the dreamers that Obama said are allowed to stay and he offered protections to. Let's deal with the bad people, which you're doing now. But building a 20-foot wall, which I understand they're already taking bids on that wall, so that means that the money's there, or he thinks it's there.
Well, he ran, you know, President Trump ran on that, you know, that he was going to deal with illegal immigration.
And it's a huge issue.
And, you know, it's a huge issue worldwide. That's what Brexit is all about, is the fact that they didn't feel like, you know, that there they have the situation that you're talking about, you know, where they don't have anybody in the EU can live wherever they want. And
are we going to build a wall around the Statue of Liberty, too, and not accept immigrants anymore?
No, because, and again, I don't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry. But, you know, and I've been to several naturalization ceremonies. We naturalize 1 million people a year, almost 1 million, more than the rest of the world put together. We can be very, very proud of that. We got 5 million people in line right now that are doing it the legal way. They're not running across the border and doing those things. So you have to deal with them first. You've got 9 million that are living in the United States. And so if you start doing amnesty, if you start doing everybody, they have the ability to bring in extended family. So you're talking about in a very short time, you know, that 9 million plus the 5 million that are standing in line, you're talking about 25, 30 million people in a very, very short time. And, you know, everybody that comes in illegally or whatever and having children, the school systems have to pay for that. That's, I think, about $12,000 average throughout the United States. There's no way that those folks, you know, they don't pay the taxes to do that. Now, don't misunderstand. These are wonderful people that work hard and they want a better life for their children. But we have to do it in an orderly way. We have to do it in the right way or the whole system breaks down. And that's kind of where we're at now. So, the other thing is don't misunderstand either. You know, I believe very strongly that we need to control our border. We need to do that in the most cost-effective and least intrusive way that we can do. And I really think that's kind of how it'll wind up. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. What about the bridges? The 55,000 bridges in the United States that are unsafe.
Well, I think we have to deal with those. And I was on the Committee of Jurisdiction, Transportation in the House, and now in the Environment and Public Works. And we passed a highway bill. We're sending a lot of money to the states to do that. To be honest, the primary obligation of those bridges and those roads is not the federal government out of Washington, but it's the states, you know, that are supposed to take care of those. And so, you know, that's how it's always been. And, you know, because of the fact that, you know, there's fiscal restraint on the states, it's made it hard. But that really is, and I supported, in Arkansas, I supported the half-cent tax, sales tax, that's done, you know, a lot of good things all over the state, you know, building bridges, building roads where the traffic's at, you know, those are good things. But it's going to take everybody working together to really solve that problem. And it really is a big one.
Okay, Senator, one last comment.
Yes, sir.
I realize that Trump got elected, but he only got elected by about 38% of the people that voted. I mean, he didn't get the majority. And I hope that the representatives in Congress, you included, would realize that right now he's only representing 40% of the people. The other 60% of us are out here. And we're going to remember in 2018 when we vote again. Thank you,
sure,
sir, for your time.
No, I understand, and again, you know, I guess my comment is that I've always said, in fact, Congressman Hammerschmidt, one of my predecessors, you know, always reminded me, told me that after I won my first election, you know, once the election over, there's not any Democrats, there's not any Republicans, there's just the people of Arkansas, and you need to work hard to take care of them, and I really do try and do that, you know, these are big problems that we have to solve, and you know, that's kind of where we're at. The other thing too is that in Arkansas, which I represent, you know, President Trump got about 60% of the vote, and Secretary Clinton got 31, I believe. So it was an overwhelming majority there of people that do support the president. So okay. Let's go to our next caller. Lots of good calls, lots of good questions. I'm sorry. Are you there?
Hello?
Go ahead. Yes, sir.
First of all, I'd like to comment that you're answering the questions on immigration and health care very professionally, and you're well knowledgeable in both of those areas. I would hope that more people, especially your last comment about only 38% of the vote who elected you, I would hope more people around the United States, and especially in our great state of Arkansas, will vote in all elections, as voting is a privilege that allows us to elect representatives to represent us effectively, and you've done a heck of a job, Senator.
No, I appreciate that, and I do appreciate, and I think our last caller would agree that, you know, we need to get people voting, period. You know, as you say, it's a great, you know, it's a great gift. It's one that we take for granted.
Yes, sir. My name is Colonel Schmidt, submarine veteran, a friend of yours for a long time also. I have two questions.
Yes, sir.
One, the first question is, the Veterans Administration selling appeals. I've had an appeal, and many others, I'm not only speaking for myself, but many others in our veteran community here have had appeals for over a year and a half, and it takes 3 years to get an answer from appeal. This is from the DAV from last week.
Right.
The appeal issue does not appear to have increased too much in the VA over the years, although they continue to say it is improving. What are your comments on appeals and VA handling claims in a more timely manner?
Yeah, no, I agree with you totally. They've got to do a much better job. And I've had the opportunity to visit with Dr. Shulkin, who's the new VA head now on probably three or four occasions this year, and have always made that point. One thing that has changed a little bit is that you're right, you know, the time and stuff, they've knocked a little bit of that off, but it's still way too long and still almost unimaginably long. And yet the number of, you know, claims and appeals that they're dealing with compared to what they used to deal with not too many years ago, really has increased dramatically. So they got a lot more. They're actually doing a lot more, but you know, the numbers, they simply haven't come up, you know, haven't been able to keep up with. And part of that is a good thing. You know, we've really worked hard. We had a caller earlier that was concerned about Agent Orange and Thailand and things like that. The VA has done a good job of including more people because with greater science and stuff, we found that Agent Orange affected a lot more people in a lot more ways than we realized. And so because of that, people have, you know, that's really been expanded, the number of conditions and things, not only with Agent Orange, but with other things. But I agree with you totally. You know, they just simply have to do a better job. And that's something that Dr. Shulkin has, you know, heard an earful of. The American Legion is up here, VFW will be up here. All of those folks will be testifying in the next week or two, and so that's something that they also will be talking a lot about to the Veterans Committee. We appreciate your service.
One other thing I'd like to kind of comment on about the veterans hospitals here in Arkansas. I'm a retired registered nurse who retired from the VA at North Little Rock. And over the last 25 years since I've been involved with the veterans program since I retired from the Navy, it has improved 110% over in the last 20 years and here in the Little Rock area. And both of our hospitals, or three hospitals, the two in Little Rock and the one in Fayetteville, are doing an outstanding job, especially the veterans home up in Fayetteville, taking care of our senior veterans.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's really good to hear from you, in the sense of, you know, I know you and know your character, but also the, you know, with your background. And so, you know, that really has been a very bipartisan effort through the years, Democrats, Republicans working together to make sure that, you know, the hospitals in Arkansas and, you know, the various facilities are doing a good job and taking care of veterans. And but like I say, that's a good thing. It's something that we have to work at, you know, all the time, all of us. Not only, you know, the people here in Congress, but also people like yourself. Our veteran service organizations have done such a tremendous job in Arkansas of being helpful. And then also, you know, making, you know, holding people accountable. And that's a good thing. So, like I said, I'm glad to hear that. Yes, sir.
Thank you for your kind words, Senator. I have one last question. I know other people want to contact you, too, tonight. Being a retired veteran and receiving disability, 40% disability, I'm just curious. My disability was a direct result of my military service, but being retired, I'm not eligible to any VA benefits or any financial benefits from the VA for my 40% disability. Is anything being done where retired veterans, regardless of being retired or not and have disabilities, should not receive a compensation, in your opinion, for their service due to the injuries and things that occurred to them while on active duty?
No, you make a good point. And, you know, as you know, until really just not too many years ago at all, in fact, it was a few years after I got to Congress that we were able to change it where, you know, if you were over 50% disabled, then you started, you know, drawing. But prior to that, all the way back to the Civil War, you know, it was such that really you paid your disability payment, you just reduced your retirement benefit, so you got nothing, you know. So that didn't make any sense at all. So we got it down to 50%. There's an effort now to try and start taking that number down lower in an effort, you know, to include more and more veterans over a period of time. But I agree. I mean, you know, the idea that you're, you know, for that 40%, you know, not everybody agrees you're disabled and yet not receiving anything for it is not a good situation.
Other than your comment, they're attempting to reduce that 50% to a lower number. Is there any legislation at this time currently that you feel might have a chance to being passed from the committee to the House and Senate for vote?
Well, right now, of course, we're just starting the new Congress. And so, you know, and really just I think last week was when we got our you know, a bunch of our committee assignments as far as our subcommittees and stuff. So all of that's really being formed. So people are in the process of introducing legislation. But I know that that's one of the things that, again, the veteran service organizations being up here will be talking about. And so, you know, hopefully we can, again, work. This is about everybody working together, you know, trying to get these things done. So
hopefully, when your committees meet, and I'm glad to hear that action is being taken place along these areas. It's been talked about for years. And
yes.
The other question is, my last question, concurrent receipts. Do you think it's really fair that a veteran was hurt and received disabilities to have his disability pay and receive no extra payment because it's taken away from out of his retirement pay?
Well, that's what I say.
Is
no,
fair?
You know. No, no. I, you know, it's really the only situation like that, I think, probably anywhere. And again, goes all the way back to the Civil War, you know, as a result of it. So, but you're right. So, appreciate you.
Hopefully, the Civil War was 200, was over 200 years.
It was a long time
hopefully,
ago.
Hopefully our representatives, and you especially, and you've been very, very effective working for veterans.
And we were able, like I say, to get it down, you know, to 50%, and that's, so, you know, we're trying, you know, to get it down below that, but it was good that we at least got a, you know, a huge step in the right direction, so it's good.
Well, you
appreciate
you
calling.
You made one other quick comment about changes. The veterans' activities here in Arkansas are very concerned about current recidivists. It took them three hard years to get the tax removed for retired veterans.
Uh-huh.
Hopefully, it will be as 2 to 3 years. Maybe something could be done different than what we discussed earlier. And God bless you, and thank you for your service to our great state.
Well, thank you so much for calling. We do appreciate your service to your country very, very much. Thank you, sir. Okay, let's go to, we've been on for a while now, so we're going to go to our last question. And don't hang up, though, because if you're on, you're waiting in line and stuff to ask a question, or if you just want to stay on, then and you weren't able to ask a question, I still want to hear your comments. So you can do this by just staying on and leaving me a voicemail, and then you know we'll work through those, and my staff will get back to you. Okay? So stay on the line, and again, leave a voicemail once we're done. Okay? And we appreciate all the good questions. Appreciate everybody being on and really having a good discussion. This, you know, I think it's really helpful for you to understand, you know, what we're trying to get done and what we're thinking. But also it's very, very important, very, very helpful for me to let me know about, you know, what you're thinking about these issues also. So let's go to our last question. Save the best for last. Are you there?
Yes, Senator.
Yes, ma'am.
I had a question or a comment for you about the Medicare and the cut that President Obama put on Medicare to providers. We're losing doctors. I lost my own and had to find another one. As it is, I have to drive one way 20 miles to see a doctor.
Right.
That is hurting. And when we get the mailings through the mail from Medicare of what they pay, well, I can understand why the doctors will start refusing Medicare patients because they don't pay tiddlywink.
Right.
But at any rate, I know that there's probably not much you can do about that, but us oldsters who worked all of our lives are being hurt in order to pay for this Affordable Care Act. We are the ones who was hit the hardest.
Yes, ma'am.
And AARP endorsed it. But at any rate, I'm 70, so my life is about over. I don't have to live too much longer with all this.
That's not true. 70's the new 50.
Yeah, it's not when your heart is 30% functioning.
Well, it sounds like you're pretty tough, though.
Well, at any rate, could I make a suggestion about limiting people's time on here?
Yes, ma'am.
Because that really hurts us, particularly when someone obviously just wants to argue about everything incessantly. And everybody's got their opinion, all right, but But just to stay on the line when there's other people waiting and just to argue about everything under the sun is just not helpful. But I'd like to remind these folks who keep asking about the infrastructure.
Uh-huh.
President Obama took or got a stimulus package for billions of dollars for infrastructure.
Uh-huh.
And where is it? Where did it go? It didn't go for anywhere around here.
Sure. No, you're
but
right. You know, that was almost
had that.
Well, that was almost $1 trillion. And
yeah.
You know, there's a big effort just to push money out the door. And so a lot of blacktopping of roads and things like that. But really no permanent infrastructure. You know, a good example of the permanent infrastructure was the New Deal, where they spent, you know, a lot of money. But they built dams. They built, you know, through the WPA and things like that. But you're right. You know, we could have done a better job with that. And we don't want to repeat the same mistake, you know, with a President Trump or you know, another president. I mean, you know, if we're going to spend money on infrastructure, then we need to do it right. And that's we got lots of things that need to be fixed. That's for sure.
Well, I remember President Obama saying, you know, the shovel-ready jobs that, as he had to admit in an interview later, turned out not to be so shovel-ready after all.
Yes, ma'am. Right.
I remember that. And there's a lot of things that should have been done with this stimulus money that really didn't get the job done. And now they're pushing President Trump, who's only had a month in office. Please, uh-huh. That's not enough time to get hardly anything done.
Sure.
But they're not giving him the chance that they did President Obama. But anyway, that was all I had. And I thank you, too, as well, for your work that you do as our senator.
We're trying. We're doing
appreciate
our best.
Appreciate very much.
And appreciate your comments very, very much. And I think you make a really good point about the infrastructure, how important it is, but we do need to do it right. And also,
exactly.
You know, President Trump, you know, is the president. And I think that, you know, we all hope that he does a very, very good job because he represents all of us now. And so that's so important.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
So, well, I appreciate you calling very, very much.
Well, thank you, Senator, for allowing me to join in on this call.
Thank you. Okay, now, yes, ma'am, thank you. That was the final question of the night, so thank you so much for participating. We had some really good questions, comments. We had questions, you know, all over the place, and that's exactly what we wanted. And I think we had some really good discussions. I know that everybody on tonight and you know, is listening, really does, you know, love their country and just, you know, wants to express the way that we need to get these things done. We've got a lot of challenges out there, and there's different ways of doing them. And so that's why it's so important to, you know, to have these kind of events. So I still want to hear your comments if we didn't get to you. So you can do this by leaving me a voicemail, and my staff will call back and, you know, answer your question. So stay on the line. Thank you.